Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today's April 20th, 2019, and happy Easter, everybody. Tomorrow's Easter, and I'm sure everybody's got great things going on, you know, going to church, having their lunches and their dinners together with family, so enjoy it, have a great time, be safe out there. As you know, if you're a faithful listener to the program, I start my day with my cup of fresh Joe from the Hilltop Cefco here in Cameron. There it is in the video. Tastes delicious, and the reason I get it is because it's consistently good all the time. Now, look, baseball season is here, right? So they've got a special going on. They've got these two large bags of David's sunflower seeds just in time for baseball. You're always seeing the pitcher spitting out seeds, or they're in there in the dugout spitting out seeds. That's probably what they're doing, if not spitting tobacco. So if you want to chew on seeds as compared to spitting on with tobacco, go to Cefco Hilltop here in Cameron and get yourself your coffee, your paper, your seeds, or whatever it is to get your day going. We're simulcasting today, as every week we do, right here on KMIL 105.1 FM, The Ranch in Cameron, and also out of Rockdale on KRXT 98.5 FM. If you can't, for some reason, get good reception through the radio, be sure to go to their websites and listen to us live there. Making contact with the program here, we had some calls coming in, and it's always enjoyable to listen to your comments and your questions. So give us a call here, be part of the show at 254-697-6633. We got a good show, and it doesn't matter what's going on. If you got a question, just give us a call, and we'll pause and answer your question. If you want to give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, and give me your comments and thoughts. All positive things get, you know, responded to, and all the negative stuff gets responded to as well. I think there's that delete button to the right. So, just kidding. All right. Also, social media. Got a lot of stuff going on social media. Facebook. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see me posting current updates, product spotlights that are coming up, some training videos, the works. And when you get there, share them. Like me on Facebook. Also, follow us on Instagram. And by all means, without a doubt, go to the YouTube channel and subscribe to the YouTube channel. So many great videos there. And ladies and gentlemen, we have Super Attorney Rick Dodd, and we've got Attorney Extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson, and so many different other interviews and product spotlights, the works, video after video after video. And specifically when it comes to the attorneys, it's all free information, doesn't cost you a dime, and it's from experts in their field. Okay, so check that out. Let me give you an idea of what's coming up on today's show. As always, we have true stories of self-defense from the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens column. And once again, this is from the 1982 issue of the American Rifleman. Let's see what we can learn and, you know, what to do and what not to do in situations like these. So get your note-taking materials ready. In my license to carry attorney segment will be a continuation of the Bill of Rights. We're going over the Bill of Rights. And this week, Super Attorney Rick Dodd will be in to review the Seventh Amendment. So stay tuned to learn all about that. Then the delicious Janae Goodman will go over an extremely interesting topic, an exciting topic, an extraordinary topic on today's tactical snacking segment. And if you haven't figured it out, it's going to be eggs, okay? Just in time for Easter. Then at 11 o'clock, we have the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the Duke of Decency, the pontificator of practicality, the epitome of encyclopedia and all-around good guy. Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement. Today's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms in the Heidenhammer, is the Mossberg 500. It's a classic for a reason, and I'm going to give a review on it at about in the 11 o'clock hour, about 11:15, 11:20, somewhere around there. Now, also, I'll be giving this week's devotional minute, so stay tuned for that. And then I'm going to have my special guest, Bill Whitmire, Republican chair from Milam County, and of course, the host of his own radio program, Bleacher Bum Radio, that comes on right before me. So check that out. He'll be on right about 11:30. So lots of info coming your way. Call in, take notes, tell everybody you know to listen, because the show is about to get in full swing after this break. So Kincaid, take us out. When we come back, we'll be starting with True Stories, Self-Defense from American Rifleman. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It is the day before Easter, April 20th, 2019. We're in our True Stories of Self-Defense segment right now out of the American Rifleman's The Armed Citizens Column 1982 edition. I've got about four stories here. Let's see, one, two, three, four, five stories. I got a couple homegrowns and one interesting one I'm going to read. So this will be a little bit of an extended segment here. Story number one. I'm reading these colds. Let's see what happens. Edward Martin started to get nervous when a customer began fidgeting and moving to the center of his back seat on his cab. The St. Louis cabbie's fears were confirmed when the man reached over the seat, stabbed him, and demanded cash. Martin responded by firing his .25 automatic, hitting the criminal three times. The man, who was linked to another cab holdup, died of the wounds. Now, the one thing I want to say, or there's a few things I want to say on this, but the first thing is, .25 automatics kill, ladies and gentlemen. Pellet rifle will kill you. So when these people say, it's not going to do anything, granted, a larger caliber is better. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying, utilize what you got, make it work for you, as this cabbie did. The other thing is he got stabbed and he was still able to, you know, maintain himself and take care of this bad guy. Story number two. Connie Albatron had been robbed five times in 1 year and had decided that she wasn't going to let it happen again. After a criminal robbed her at knife point inside a Tampa, Florida bar where she worked, she followed the man into the parking lot, leveled a .25 automatic, and held him for police. I thought she was hunting him down to shoot him. That would have been bad. But she held him at bay until the police got there and did it with a little old .25. So remember, whatever you got, master it. Story number three. Retired postal clerk Clark Goodwin, 68, saw a pair of men leave his next-door neighbor's house and try to break into the neighbor's car. When he challenged them, one man fired at him with a .22 caliber pistol. Goodwin opened up with his own pistol, routing the two. The next-door neighbor was found severely beaten and rolled up in a carpet. Gosh. Police speculated that the criminals planned to return and kill him. Goodwin was honored with the St. Louis Grand Jury Association for his action. That's just being alert, ladies and gentlemen. Got to be alert of your surroundings. Take care of your neighbors. You know, community watches, the whole works. We're getting to this point where everybody stays in the confines of their house because all the electronics, and we don't even know who our neighbors are. It's a good thing to know who our neighbors are and take care of each other. Okay, next story. When an armed robber pointed a .22 pistol at him and demanded money, Tulsa, Oklahoma liquor store owner Thomas Shaw reached instead for a .357 Magnum revolver. All right, everybody's getting excited now. Larger caliber. He opened up and hit the criminal once in the head and three times in the chest, killing him on the spot. Yeah, I would think so. The robber had a criminal record dating back to 1942 and had killed a man in 1952. Police called the dead man an 11-time loser. He should have been lost a long time ago, ladies and gentlemen, and I have no remorse, no question, no doubt as to this gentleman did the right thing, and I'm sure he's walking tall and proud. Next story. An armed robber pointed a pistol at a Hamilton, Ohio grocer, William Heeb, I believe you pronounce it, and demanded cash. As the criminal rifled his cash register, Heeb grabbed a .38 caliber revolver and opened fire, hitting him three times. The robber tried to flee in a waiting car, but died before he got that far. Ladies and gentlemen, another thing that I notice in the older stories is that they're much more accurate in their gunfire. In the current stories that we read, they hit him in the leg or they shot and nobody got hit and things of that nature. I don't know if it's because people in that day just got to shoot more or they were trained better. I don't know. But that's the one thing I noticed in a lot of these stories. Okay, that's from Out of the American Rifleman. Now I've got a couple stories here that I think are interesting. 65-year-old beats burglar with a bat. When a Florida woman heard a noise and saw a man trying to break into her car early Sunday, she took matters into her own hand. Clarice Gainey, 65, of Gainesville, told WGFL that she picked up her softball bat early Sunday, braced herself, and eased open the door before hitting Antonio Mosley. I took the bat and hit him upside the head like, pia, Gainey said, adding that the 5'6", 300-pound man said, ow. Mosley ran to a nearby mobile home park, leaving behind his pants, shirt, and sock. This part I don't get. Police said a canine unit tracked him down, and Gainey said she easily identified him because of the knot on his head. Gainey said she played softball in high school and can still swing a bat. He better be glad I didn't have a gun, Gainey said, because I would have shot him. So there you go. 65-year-old beats the crap out of a robber with a baseball bat. This next one's a little strange. Deputies look for a naked burglar. This is in Florida. A lot happens in Florida. Authorities in Florida are asking for the public's help in tracking down a man who they say burglarized a Little League concession stand wearing nothing more than a ball cap and gloves. The Pinellas County Sheriff's Office said the naked burglar struck the stand at Fisher Field in almost 2 weeks ago. Deputies said the burglar stole cameras and a cash box of $250 inside, and he caused $5,000 in damage. Surveillance video obtained by the Tampa Bay Times also shows the man taking a package of hot dogs. The ball field shared the field with the high school. Now, ladies and gentlemen, where do you pack all that stuff when you're naked? Under your hat? Under your gloves? I don't know, but I thought that was interesting. Then, this last story. Rhino poacher killed by elephant and eaten by lions. How do you like that one? A rhinoceros poacher was stomped to death by an elephant and eaten by lions in South Africa Wildlife Preserve, and rangers found just his skull and trousers, authorities said. The man and two others were hunting illegally at the Kruger National Park last week when the elephant surprised them, the park spokesman said. The hunter's companions dragged his body to a spot near a road and told the man's family what happened. It took 2 days for rangers to find his remains. South Africans weighed in on social media, with many celebrating the poacher's death, calling it justice, or applauding for the animals for restoring law and order in the jungle. Others blame the economic desperation that leads people to become poachers. I don't know about that, but I thought that was, you're going to poach an animal when you're not supposed to? Hey, they don't have guns, but they sure as heck can step on you. So there you go. And then eat you after that. All right, those are two stories of self-defense. Now, let me read to you. I always have an observation piece. So I'm going to read to you that. Rick is in the house. Rick, if you'll bear with me for a minute.
It's good to be here. You know, poachers are our lowest form of life.
You're a hunter, so I understand why you say that.
Yeah. Well, lawyers get that credit a lot of times, but it's not deserved it's like not poachers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have an observation. And this week is no different. And I guess it falls into play since it's Easter here. It's titled, Preparedness is Like Christ. Ladies and gentlemen, being prepared in life is like having Christ as your Savior. Because if you're not prepared and don't have Christ, you're screwed when the time comes. You're screwed when something bad happens in this life, and then screwed in the afterlife. In this life, if we're not careful, we can get consumed with the niceties of life and forget that these niceties are very fragile. Fragile to the point that if the power fails, nothing works. Are you prepared for that? If we are not careful, our time can be consumed with the niceties of life and make us push aside or neglect that which is truly important, a close relationship with our Lord. In case you haven't figured it out, I'm a Christian, and I am by no means pushing you to become a Christian if you're not one already. All I'm doing is making an observation as a prepared Christian. And in the final analysis of things, in this life, if you're not prepared, it will be too late to learn a new skill to get out of the situation that arises. And in my opinion, in my faith, when you're dead, it'll be too late to accept Christ as your Lord and Savior. So what should a prudent person do to avoid these pitfalls? Well, first thing would be to do is acknowledge that there may be shortcomings in your preparedness plans, and the other would be to develop a personal relationship with Christ. Then take steps to get better prepared for natural and man-made disasters and protection of yourself, family, and property. And on top of that list should be prayer. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my observation that not being prepared and not having Christ will just end up getting you screwed in the end. No pun intended. All right, Kincaid, let's take us out. When we come back, we'll have Super Attorney Rick Dodd with us, and we're going to go over the Seventh Amendment, one of his favorites. See you on the other side.
Next time you need heating and air conditioning or even duct cleaning, call Climate Control Air Conditioning and Heating in Rockdale. Routine maintenance, repairs, installation, or duct cleaning. Get the pros at Climate Control Air Conditioning and Heating. 512-446-4020. Stop by 1244 US 79 in Rockdale. They can service all brands of residential and commercial HVAC systems and are available 24 hours a day, including weekends and holidays. For the best, call Climate Control in Rockdale. 512-446-4020.
A trust as true as Texas, a friend with a helping hand. When you want to ensure the good things in life, trust Germania.
Is your insurance company taking too big a bite out of your apple? When you're shopping for property insurance, think about coverage, service, and price. Make sure you're getting the most for your money. When you compare apples to apples, you'll see that Germania Insurance delivers outstanding value. Competitive rates, flexible payment options, and discounts. Plus, Germania offers 24/7 customer claim service. Trusted by Texans since 1896. Don't give up service or sacrifice coverage. Compare apples to apples, then choose the outstanding value offered by Germania Insurance.
So when you want to insure the good things in life, trust Germania.
Call 697-4683 for Sharon Ruback, representative of Ruback Insurance and Germania Farm Mutual Companies.
Hi, everyone. Matt, your host from Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program here, and I'm very excited to tell you about our new sponsor, Liquor Depot, located in the Milam Plaza right next to Brookshire Brothers. As you know, I'm a bartender, and when I walk into Liquor Depot, I get excited looking at all the variations of wine, beer, and spirits. So if you're going to have a party, wedding, or business event, and you want to serve alcohol, Liquor Depot is the place to come to stock your bar and your icebox. Great prices, excellent selection, and lots of friendly help to get you what you need. There are lots of great enhanced gift ideas, too, for any occasion. Liquor Depot is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and is located at 1604 West 4th. So stop in today and stock up or call Liquor Depot at 254-605-0766.
Capellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capellino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Can you hear me?
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is April 20th, 2019, the day before Easter. So once again, if you haven't heard me, happy Easter to y'all. To my left in the house, I have Super Attorney Rick Dodd. And Rick, it's always a pleasure to have you. And in case you don't know it, Rick Dodd is the part of the Coppolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm that helps sponsors this long segment. And we couldn't be on the air without him and all of our other sponsors. So we want to thank these guys and thank all of our other sponsors as well. And remember to support them and as much as you can. Rick, we've been doing the Bill of Rights, going over the 10 Bill of Rights, and Ross has been in and done, I think, what, six of them?
At least.
Seven of them. And now you're in to do your favorite, which is the Seventh Amendment.
Yeah, I enjoy doing the Fourth Amendment, but the Seventh is definitely my favorite because it's the kind of law I practice, the jury trials.
Well, it makes sense. So you must know it inside and out.
Well, there's not much to it. What the courts have determined is that it's pretty self-explanatory. Have you read it for us?
You know what's funny? You say it's self-explanatory, and I was reading it, and I go, I need questions on this, this, and this, because I'm not sure of it. So, no, it's not self-explanatory, Judge. I need an explanation. So that's why Rick's here. He's going to help us out. I'm going to read to you. First, before I do that, Rick, I'd like to read the preamble to the Bill of Rights. A lot of people didn't know that was there. And the preamble to the Bill of Rights is just an insurance policy to make sure that nothing's misconstrued and that they understand clearly what these rights are about. So,
the history of that preamble also has to do with the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. The Federalists, of course, wanted to adopt the Constitution as it was. The Anti-Federalists were concerned that it would take away states' rights. So the Federalists then decided that if we come up with these 10 Bill of Rights to guarantee that the federal government won't overstep their bounds, we can get it passed, which they were successful in doing.
Okay, very good. A good explanation. Let me read what it says. Congress of the United States begun and held at the city of New York on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 1789. The conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. And then let me read to you the Seventh Amendment. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. So that's the Seventh Amendment. And Rick, I got questions just because of terminology and phrasing that would need clarification. You want to go over those real quick?
Well, basically what you got is the Seventh Amendment is guarantees the right to a jury trial. And that's what's really important for us to consider. And let me talk a little bit about it before you ask questions.
Okay.
And it's like the first generations of Americans believed that this right was so important that they didn't want to pass the Constitution as it was without it. There were actually 12 amendments that were placed in front of the states, and many of the states didn't adopt but 11, and some didn't adopt the same one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So it left us with 10 amendments that were adopted by, I think, 75% of the states. During the process, Vermont got named as a state, so it caused us to actually have to have two more. So I think the last ones to adopt them were Delaware and New York. So that's where we get the 10 amendments. But they were absolutely requiring the Seventh Amendment, the one for a jury trial. And the reason for that was because leading up to the American Revolution, here in America, we didn't have a right to a jury trial. Now, John Wilkes, back in London, he wrote some stuff that was not very flowery for the crown.
You know, you're saying that now. I can't believe that would happen back then. It's against your nature, or is it because we're Americans with these rights now that we are so opposed to that thought process?
Well, we weren't in charge then. The crown was in charge.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
So, you know, it all has to do with who's in power. And the crown was in power, but he was losing some of his power. Basically, there was a parliament, and the people had decided that they had the right to behead some of their leaders. And, you know, the crown didn't want that to happen, obviously.
Yeah, that's right.
So he was willing to give up a little bit of his power. So when the jury trial came along and John Wilkes had written his stuff that was sort of against the crown, the jury actually acquitted him. And that decision was applauded on both sides of the Atlantic, not just here in America. But we didn't have that right. So, as you recall, the taxation without representation came up, the Tea Party happened, and then when the Revolution came along and we started to adopt, we wanted the right to a jury trial. So they had that opportunity to go against what the English government had when they tried to enforce this Stamp Act, and they also hated the actions of Parliament when it came to criminal and civil actions. So they wanted that jury trial benefiting everybody in the United States. So what happened in the new government, One representative of our new government pointed out that there was no provision had been included for a right to a jury trial. This is when they were just talking about the naked Constitution. In other words, the one without
the Bill of Rights.
The Bill of Rights. So they went ahead and put that in, and of course the majority of the delegates, I think it was unanimous, picked it up, and then all of the states that ratified also ratified the Seventh Amendment. So you had a story about the Federalists that I just talked about,
mm-hmm.
wanting it in order to go ahead and get the Constitution passed. They originally were against it. Then they found out that they might not get the whole thing passed, and then they were for it. And suddenly those that were against getting the Constitution decided they might be against the Bill of Rights, even though that's what they had wanted in the first place. So it's kind of one of those political mix-ups that makes a good story.
So a state that didn't want one right could have killed the whole thing of all the other rights?
Well, 75%. So you had to have 75% want all of the ones that were passed. In other words, if you had 100% wanting eight of them, and then only 60% wanting another one or two, and then a different one or two not being wanted by another part, then it might not pass those others. But 100% would, of course, got the eight. But you got to have 75 for each one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it wasn't like a package deal. You either vote on this or not. It's one by one, percentage-wise, that gets accepted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happens today is that there are people, mainly corporations, that are against the idea, and they're basically jury bashing, and you know they're the same sort of wealthy and powerful special interests that our founders were warning us about when they passed it. In other words, people who could yield and wield power against us, you know, the common people mm-hmm. that were out there trying to do the best we could with what we had. But if we have that special right for a jury trial, It's a rule of law, and the rule of law helps all Americans ensure our freedoms of expression, the sanctity of our contracts, the rights of workers out there, the safety of products and services, the preservation of our environment, and all the underpinnings of our great civil society. And you see, if you take any one of those away because the powerful are not in favor of it, and when I say powerful, I mean it's going to cost. If you have a corporation out there that's polluting our environment, there's a cost. And, of course, it's going to be saving that corporation a certain amount of money because instead of having to process their pollutants, mm-hmm. they just dump them out on the ground. It runs down the creek.
See, but that's a grotesque way of making a profit. I understand there may be waste and spoilage and some type of pollution, but when there is no protection, like you're saying here, and they just have the free ability to do whatever they want, it grotesquely violates human and natural, just nature in itself. So I could see how that just has to be taken care of, you know?
Well, but when the bottom line for a being, and a Supreme Court of the United States that says that a corporation is a being, a person, if you may, you know, for freedom of speech, for instance, that's the big one that came out more recently. When the bottom line for them is to make a profit, you kind of wonder where the concept of grotesqueness stops. I mean, they are out to make that profit. That's the bottom line. And being gross is not a big concern for them. So that's why we have to have regulations. And, of course, we hear the newspaper talk about terrible regulations, job-killing regulations, and we talk about we hear it from the rich and the powerful, but you know, the regulations are necessary because of those sorts of actions. And fortunately, the jury trials will not only protect us as individuals, but it will protect those folks too. So if they get wrongly accused,
is the term over-regulation a fair term?
Well, you know, it depends on what side of the fence you're standing on. If you're standing on the side of the fence that's clean and pristine and you don't want the stuff running over on your side of the fence, then it's not. But if you're on the other side of the fence and you want to get rid of your stuff and let it run across to the other guy, then, yeah, you're over-regulated.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, that's true if you're driving a Lamborghini down the road, the speed limit suddenly changes to 40 miles an hour, you're thinking, man, I'm overregulated.
I'm paying too much for this car, man. I can't even go past 40 miles an hour.
So it just depends on where you're sitting. I mean, the term overregulation.
I got a story about a Lamborghini. I'm in.
And it also depends on your beliefs. You know, if you have a core belief that, such as I do, that, and it's based on what I believe to be lifelong experiences, that there is global warming and that it is caused by human activity, then you're going to be looking at some regulation and saying, well, that's great, that's wonderful. But if you're, on the other hand, you are solely concerned about economic development, then you want everything to burn and churn. So then,
what about the middle ground where we want economic development in a very smart manner that's not overburdening, that won't, because I mean, business has to thrive to a certain point, otherwise it collapses.
We all psychologically like to believe that we're fair and reasonable. If I stand up in front of a jury panel of 90 people and ask who's fair and reasonable, they're all going to raise their hand. It's going to be me. Yeah. But then, you know, Mr. Smith over here, he may be really hardcore against having any kind of, say, for instance, coloring on his windows in a car, whereas someone else over on the left, they may be happy to have limo covering on their car window so nobody can see in. So it just depends on who's fair and reasonable. You know, the middle ground, of course, is what we're after. That'd be the great thing, to have some sort of middle ground. But then again, the concepts of people's ideas about what is the middle ground changes and shifts, as do politicians trying to get our votes.
It's a twisted, messed up world. The web of lies, man.
Well, but it is what it is, and we have to work within the system.
Well, what's nice about it is that if it goes one way, we have the ability to say it's not working and try to do what it takes to get it changed through persuasion and information and votes.
Yeah. So, well, and you know, talk about votes. You know, some of our duties as Americans is to protect our country and military. And certainly everyone talks about voting as a duty of all Americans. Well, serving on a jury is also a duty for all Americans.
Absolutely.
It is a patriotic duty. And without that opportunity, then you get overreaching by the rich and powerful. Without that opportunity, you get overreached by politicians who've been put in place by rich and powerful. But with a jury, you're able to go in and normal folks can make a decision based on, you know, the 6 or 12, depending on what kind of courthouse you're in. They can come together with their lifelong experiences and come up with a, hopefully, middle-of-the-ground decision, mm-hmm. as you talked about. Those that are against that concept, those who seek to undermine this institution that's fundamentally American, they distrust the American people. And what I mean by that, that's you and your family, your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers. Those people who go out and do their patriotic duty of serving on a jury are being distrusted by those who are trying to ramp down that system. So, anyway, having said all that.
You know, you've known me for quite a while now, Rick, and I think you know where I come from on all this, and that is there are pillars that hold this country up in our way of life, and it's the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And if they get chipped away and eaten away and put to the side, I believe this country fails. I know this country will fail. So I'm very adamant and very stubborn and very protective of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, to preserve them the way they were written. However, outside of that, preserving the goose allows us to have the eggs, and we can paint the eggs to different colors that we like or favor or get persuaded to do. So that's, ladies and gentlemen, I just wanted to make clear, that's the way I've always been. I wore a uniform to protect the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the way of American life. And the reason I have issues nowadays is because the Constitution and those rights are constantly being chipped away and trying to made altered or eliminated by a lot of people, in my opinion, that don't have a true core value or understanding of the American way of life. I think American way of life is being diluted too quickly. A lot of people coming in from other areas don't understand the way this country was and built. And I say that because maintain America for what it is, protect it, and then those who come in to assimilate can bring their culture to it and celebrate their culture there. But also remember that America comes first if you're here.
Yeah. Talk about celebrating cultures. I mean, all you have to do is go out to Marik in the last part of August, and you'll see a culture being celebrated. But they have assimilated. I mean, they're a part of our society, and it's a wonderful thing.
I remember being raised in New York. Don't crucify me for that. But being raised in New York, I have Lebanese heritage.
And you saw all sorts of cultures. I mean,
but what it was, I remember my mom and dad, they would have the club, the Lebanese American club, and they would have their foods, and they'd speak their language, they'd play their games. But when they would go to a parade, the banners on the side of the vehicles would say, "Thank you, America. God bless America." They put America first, and they just enjoyed their culture. The other way it is now, you got people coming here with their culture and wanting to push away the American way of life, and I can't tolerate that.
Well, some of the things have been happening in Texas as far as jury trials should and do give me great concern, and it should give everybody great concern. I mean, I can't sit here and go through them all, but basically, if I asked you to give me an example of a jury trial that went awry, in other words, something that just went wrong in the system, most people are going to point to the McDonald's case. And the facts of the McDonald's case are rather enlightening against the concept of limiting juries as opposed to what McDonald's has done. And McDonald's, being the largest advertiser in the world, was able to get this story out that really messed everybody's mind up about what a jury trial is all about. And you got to remember, that happened in 1992. Stella LaBey, I think she was 80 years old, retired school teacher, was a passenger in a car as opposed to being a driver. She got the coffee the drive-through. Her son was driving, pulled over to the side of the road where she was going to pop the top off and put some sugar in it. It spilled in her crotch area and gave her third-degree burns. Her labia, ladies and gentlemen, was burned off. Stella had three different skin grafts. She had a total of about $200,000 in medical. Maybe it was $125,000. In any case, it was a substantial amount of money. A friend of mine, attorney out of Houston, took the case in, Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's where it was. Not necessarily a hotbed of liberalism, Albuquerque isn't. So they tried the case, and the jury heard that there had been over 500 different lawsuits against McDonald's, mostly for babies that were sitting, laid down in the chairs while somebody drank coffee at the table and spilt it on the baby. The jury learned that old people were affected by this because they aren't able to get away from hot stuff as quickly as maybe someone a little more agile. And Stella was really no different in that she had some serious injuries. She had contacted McDonald's and said, "Look, if you'll pay my medical, that'll be the end of it." And, of course, they refused. In fact, they got on the witness stand. Vice presidents got on the witness stand and said, "Well, we know that we serve our coffee about 10 degrees hotter than everybody else serves their coffee, but we do that so that the aroma will entice people to buy more coffee." So
that did not sound good at all.
They said, "Yeah, we're not going to change it. We're not going to do it. We're going to keep doing it this way. It's not our fault. It's her fault." And the jury didn't buy that. They may have given Stella some fault, but they went ahead and decided that Stella should get about $600,000 plus some punitive damages based on, I think, either 1 or 2 days worth of hot coffee sales for McDonald's, which was, I think, about $2.2 million, which is a substantial amount of money. But punitive damages are not to enhance Stella. It's to punish the wrongdoer. And if you're going to punish a wrongdoer that makes that kind of money, and you compare it maybe to like me getting a traffic ticket, well, let's give them a traffic ticket and what might cost me, $160 if I make, say, $40,000-$50,000 a year, which should cost McDonald's a lot more than $2.2 million. So it really wasn't outrageous. But nonetheless, the trial judge eliminated those punitive damages right off the bat. and gave a judgment to Stella for about $600,000. You don't hear any part of this story in McDonald's, because when they got the Wall Street Journal to print the story and everybody at time, you know, they're all big corporations, so they went with McDonald's, who gives them a lot of money to advertise. Anyway.
It's a big vicious circle.
So, well, it is, and it's, you know, you follow the money. Mm-hmm. But in any case, both sides appealed. You know, of course, Stella appealed because she didn't think the judge should have taken away the punitives, and McDonald's appealed because they didn't want to pay $600,000. And eventually it was settled for a confidential amount, non-disclosed confidential amount. But it's from good information, I think it probably settled for somewhere around what the verdict should have been, the $600,000. And after expenses and medical and attorney's fees, Stella would have wound up maybe with about $100,000, maybe $150,000 for her burned off labia and three different skin grafts. So the real story is not something that we need to pound our chest over and go, and wow, we got to get rid of jury trials because they just run away.
Just a side note on that coffee. The hotter the coffee, the bitter, more bitter it gets. So I mean, you might want coffee a little bit less hot than that.
But it's not what you said earlier.
That's why CEFCO premium coffee tastes the
fresh
same.
Joe, yeah.
Fresh Joe. Go ahead.
So it's not just attorneys like myself who practice trial law that have a concern about what's going on in Texas. I mean, what we see as wrong-headed activism now is being embraced by some of the Tea Party friends of ours. I mean, Tea Party activists are beginning to question whether the Texas Republicans have dismantled the Seventh Amendment for us. They're beginning to question whether or not our Texas Supreme Court is going too far to the right. They're beginning to question some of the laws that our legislators are passing, which limits the right to jury trials. I mean, when I started practicing about 30 years ago, somewhere around 2.5-3% of civil actions were decided by juries. Today, it's less than 1%. It's about 0.75%. So if you look at that math, it's about a third of what it used to be. And when you look at 2.5%, it wasn't like there's a whole bunch of them going on.
How do you get that way when it says clearly that you can't get that way?
Well,
who allows it to happen where it gets down to 1%?
Well, one of the things that's happened is that the legislature keeps writing laws that limit our ability. And most of the folks out there really don't see these laws and understand. For instance, there's one where it's called paid or incurred. It used to be where if I got hurt and I went to my brother who was a doctor, I could ask my jury to award what would be a fair and reasonable amount for my medical bills. But now, with this new legislation, it's only what's paid or incurred. So, for instance, if someone's on Medicare and there's a $4,000 medical bill and Medicare only pays $400, then you only get to ask the jury for $400, which you have to pay Medicare back for. So there's no room for attorney's fees anymore. There's no room for any of that stuff. And all the money that was spent, millions of dollars, to passed Proposition 13 here in Texas, not only limited our laws and allowed the legislature to put caps on things and shut down some of the Seventh Amendment rights, but it also, in my opinion, poisoned the jury panel's mind. Today, particularly in car wreck cases, juries believe that if they were to award money, that eventually they're going to have to pay for it from themselves. And, you know, that's what insurance is all about.
Yeah.
It's supposed to, you pay for insurance to take care of this sort of stuff. But juries today are so concerned about giving too much money that I see probably 95% of the car cases that are tried in Texas result in absolutely no money for pain and suffering and no money for mental anguish.
Yeah, but isn't that based on the persuasion of an attorney in the courtroom saying, hey...
Well, it's based on the minds that are already poisoned by misinformation like the McDonald's case. Again, when I stand up and ask people for examples of...
Yeah, I know, but wouldn't an attorney bring that up and say, hey, see, they're trying to persuade the jury using examples, then a person like yourself would come in and try and say, no.
But this is the fundamental thing about jury psychology is I cannot stand up and change anybody's mind in a two-hour opportunity to speak to them in a voir dire. I can't convince them that their core values and core beliefs are wrong. So what I have to do is ride the wild pony. I have to go, oh, yeah, there are way too many lawsuits, ladies and gentlemen. We know that. But this is not one of the frivolous ones that I represent. And that's the only way to do it, according to the trial psychologist, because if I try to convince them that Stella LaBey's case was genuine and that the concept that they have that there are too many lawsuits is wrong, then suddenly they look at me as just
Yeah, but
being
you know,
a liar.
Ricky, I heard the side of that story of a woman who spilled coffee on herself and is now suing McDonald's for all this money. What a jerk, okay?
Yeah.
Here you explain the details, and I go, well, I get it. I understand it. I mean, it was severe burns. Yes, she's partially to blame, but there's also, why are you, the company makes it sound like they're so into profits, they don't care, they're jacking up the price because they're enticing you to buy more coffee. I can see that aspect of it, too. So if you were to explain that to a jury, maybe that's persuasion right there.
Well, again, they have core beliefs that there's too many lawsuits and that they give too much money. So they're just not going to do it. And where they get that is from companies, organizations like Texas for Lawsuit Reform. Now, they claim to be a grassroots organization. They claim they have over 15,000 members. And follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
They get 90% of their money from six different donors. And they have had a profound effect on jury trials in Texas. They have had a profound effect on the laws that the legislature has passed, limiting lawsuits, putting caps on lawsuits, and the Supreme Court that's been elected by the people who get advertising from Texas for Lawsuit Reform, millions of dollars, remember, they're up there embracing arbitration clauses. Now, you know, you and I, we have arbitration clauses on our cell phones, on our credit cards. We have arbitration clauses on almost every contract that we sign these days, including employment contracts. So that if you go to work in some of the bigger corporations and you get hurt, you don't have work. They don't buy workers' compensation. They get you to sign an arbitration, and then they buy some sort of a quasi insurance policy that has a cap of either $300,000 or $500,000. And that's just about the limit of it. So you have to go to arbitration, which is fundamentally unfair, because if I'm going in front of an arbitrator whose job is to be an arbitrator, that person is probably going to come from a background of being very conservative, you know, bankers, you know, people who retired from big business. They go into arbitration, but they get chosen by ostensibly both parties, right?
It's like you're trying to pick your juror.
Well, if I go in there with Jim Bob Smith with a case for arbitration, that's going to be the only time Jim Bob's ever going to have to go to an arbitration, whereas AT&T, on the other hand, does it all the time. They pick arbitrators every day. So my middle-of-the-man arbitrator, guess who he's going to be leaning for? Because mm-hmm. he wants that next job.
That's right.
Yeah.
Rick, time's ticking. I want to ask a question, though. I've had discussions with people, and some of their concerns are, I can't afford an attorney. I don't think they're aware that you may give the consultation for free.
Yeah.
You want to explain that? Tell people how they can get a hold of you and what you do and how they shouldn't be worried about anything up front if you're able to work something out, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do all of my cases and have pretty much for the last 35 years on a contingency fee. In other words, we get a part of the recovery. And I'm happy to talk to people about cases because it's not always injury cases. It can be a contract case. We've handled oil and gas cases. We've handled some patent stuff regarding, well, not really patent stuff, but genetics, you know, theft of proprietary interest in genetics. Some of the stuff is very scientific and gets rather complicated, but the bottom line is that people will come to us with their problems and their concerns about being harmed. If you've been harmed by another, in other words, another being a corporation or a car wreck or a truck wreck or real estate transaction, we could help and sit and talk to you about it. And if we don't want your case, we'll tell you. If we don't think we can help you, we will let you know. If there are certain things in the law that say, I'm sorry you've been harmed, but guess what? Your right to a jury trial has been infringed, we'll tell you. But if we think we can help you and we take the case, we will front, the expenses. And some of these cases can be very expensive. For instance, I've had a couple of cases where we had $500,000 in expenses laying on the table as we were entering the courtroom. So a lot of people can't afford that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but
especially if you've been severely injured and you can't work.
Yeah, but a person who comes to you and you decide to do that and you're just putting $500,000 on the table, ladies and gentlemen, they're going to work extremely hard for you. Okay.
Well, I mean, we're really proud of the jobs we do. We were, for instance, Newsweek named my firm one of the top 10 trial lawyer firms in the nation.
Wow.
So I was very proud of that. You know, you talk about super lawyers. We've been named super lawyers 4 or 5 different times. So we've worked hard. I mean, you know, it's been done.
Well, tell everybody how to get a hold of you. And
we can be looked at at respectforyou.com, R-E-S-P-E-C-T,
okay,
foryou.com. You can find us in Cameron. We are here, and if you don't know where we are, just ask somebody, but it's down on the same road that the three banks are on, 312 South Houston.
Rick, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much.
And, well, I wish I could have talked another 2 hours about the Seventh Amendment.
Well, maybe we can get you back on at a later time. Okay. All right, okay, let's go out with a quick break, and we'll come back in for enough time to get Delicious Janae on and get the chief up at right around 11:01. Okay, so we'll see you on the other side, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. What you want?
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Hi, everyone. Matt, your host from Aaron's High Cab Adventure Radio program here, and I'm very excited to tell you about our new sponsor, Liquor Depot, located in the Milam Plaza right next to Brookshire Brothers. As you know, I'm a bartender, and when I walk into Liquor Depot, I get excited looking at all the variations of wine, beer, and spirits. So if you're going to have a party, wedding, or business event, and you want to serve alcohol, Liquor Depot is the place to come to stock your bar and your icebox. Great prices, excellent selection, and lots of friendly help to get you what you need. There are lots of great enhanced gift ideas, too, for any occasion. Liquor Depot is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and is located at 1604 West 4th. So stop in today and stock up or call Liquor Depot at 254-605-0766.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yacht equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog motors. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Hello, my lovelies. I'm so happy today. So happy to share some exciting facts with you and give you some excellent ideas to step up your egg game. I'm Janae Goodman, and this is Tactical Snacking. Let's get cracking. Eggs are about 78 calories. Most of those calories are contained within the yolk, or the yellow portion of the egg. The egg whites also contain calories, but the egg whites are much lower in cholesterol. Therefore, those of you with high cholesterol should stray away from eating the entire egg. Eggs come in all kinds of different colors. The color has nothing to do with the composition or the nutritional value of the egg. Instead, the egg color is actually dependent of the breed of the chicken. So, regardless of if you enjoy white, brown, green, or blue eggs, don't fret. Your egg will come packed with energy-boosting vitamins and protein. Eggs aren't nearly as intimidating as they may seem, I promise. For instance, poached eggs may seem like a pain, but if you line a small bowl with plastic wrap, coat it with a small amount of nonstick spray, crack your egg into it, and tie the plastic baggie so the egg is sealed inside, you'll have a perfectly spherical egg every single time. Sunny-side-up eggs just need to be cracked into a small, greased, oven-safe skillet and baked at 350 degrees until the whites are no longer clear. Scrambled eggs can be made in the microwave. Whisk up your eggs with salt, pepper, and a splash of milk, spray a microwave-safe container with nonstick spray or oil, and pour your whisked eggs into it. Cover it loosely with a bit of plastic wrap and microwave for about 2 minutes. This method is perfect for when you can't spare the time to cook an elaborate breakfast or you just need a quick egg sandwich or a quick snack. So how are you supposed to know if your eggs are still good to use? Well, one method just uses a tall glass of water and your uncracked egg. To test your egg, carefully place the egg in your glass of water and wait to see if it sinks or floats. If your egg sinks, it's fresh and it's suitable for eating. If it rests somewhere in the middle, it should be used as soon as possible. If your egg floats like a boat, toss it. It's deemed spoiled at that point. Older eggs are best for boiling. They've had time to weaken in a sense, meaning that the egg whites won't stick to your shell when you try to peel them. So boiling them could be a great way to utilize those middle resting eggs. If you need to remove an eggshell from your cracked eggs, use a portion of the shell. The accidental piece is attracted to it, meaning it's less hassle for you. If you often see a grayish yolk when you cook your hard-boiled eggs, you may be boiling them for too long. Egg yolks should be a bright yellow, and you achieve that by boiling your eggs for about 10 to 12 minutes. The gray ring you see is caused by a gas bubble that pops inside of the egg. This is also what's responsible for that sulfur smell of rotten eggs. Did you know that there's 100 ways to cook an egg? So you shouldn't have to scramble for ideas for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Some of the more popular options include fried, poached, scrambled, boiled, and deviled eggs. Eggs deserve a standing ovation for all of the foods that they elevate. They're delicious on their own, but did you know that eggs can be used to thicken soups and sauces? Take carbonara sauce, for example. This Italian-style dish uses starchy pasta water, Parmesan cheese, and whisked eggs to create a smooth, creamy, delicious sauce. Eggs can also be great for textural use, much like an egg drop soup, where beaten eggs are steadily streamed or dropped into a hot broth. For now, let's step up that boiled egg game of yours, starting with the Scotch egg. For 9 Scotch eggs, you'll need 9 large hard-boiled eggs, about a pound and a half of ground raw sausage, half a teaspoon of ground nutmeg, 1 tablespoon of Dijon mustard, salt and pepper to taste, and half a cup of finely chopped parsley. You'll also want to keep flour, scrambled eggs, and breadcrumbs for your breading station, as well as oil for frying. Cool your hard-boiled eggs in cool water and peel off the shell. Next, prepare and season your sausage by mixing it with your ground nutmeg, Dijon mustard, salt and pepper, and parsley. Set it aside. Before you begin nesting your eggs in delicious sausage, set up your breading station by putting flour, 3 scrambled eggs, and fine breadcrumbs all into separate medium bowls. Now you can take your sausage mixture and completely cover each of your boiled eggs with it. Carefully dip each sausage-wrapped boiled egg into flour, egg wash, and then finally your breadcrumbs. Fry each breaded egg over medium-high heat for about 6 minutes or until they're golden brown. Remove them from the oil and drain on a paper towel before enjoying. You'd think I'd be exhausted from all that exceptional information, but if you need to know more, email me at tacticalsnacking@yahoo.com. Have a sunny side up weekend, and until next time, stay hungry, my friends.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. It is now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I hope you're having a great Easter weekend. You know, it's the for the Christian faith, it's the time of the year when we believe in the resurrection. We believe that, you know, all things are possible. And, you know, I was contemplating that this morning. I got up early this morning. The sun was coming up. And thinking about how cool and crisp it was, and about how a new day is dawning, you know, I recently celebrated my 45th year as a law enforcement officer. I would have, and I was thinking about this morning on what happened in my career and how I kind of transgressed. You know, there were a couple of people that were very instrumental in keeping me and making me want to be a police officer. People such as Robert Mitchell, Joe Kiefer, Mike Hughes, Paul Pochval, rest his soul, Robbie Goodnight, Nigger Griffin, and Dale Durham. These were all people that I looked up to, and I thought that they were, you know, the people that I wanted to emulate my life around and be like as far as law enforcement was concerned. Well, then I started thinking, you know, if you read the newspapers today, the Temple Telegram, it was filled with crime. It was filled about things that have happened in the neighborhoods, filled about death and destruction. And then I started thinking, you know, we're losing people in law enforcement. It's hard for police officers, hard for law enforcement to get enough applicants to be able to field a strong field. Well, I started thinking about that and I started wondering why. Well, I came across an article, and this is not my article, I'll be first to admit it, but it's an article that I read this morning that kind of drove me into believing that there are instances that happen that I'm going to read about. Now, I want to say this article is a little disturbing, and if you get disturbed easily, I ask that you probably turn your radio down for just a few moments while I'm talking. But I think it would be very instrumental in knowing that why we're losing a lot of good tenured officers in the profession. And this article is named "The Day I Had to Choose Between Fighting Evil or Being a Cop." And it goes like this. It was a clear night with just the right amount of chill in the air to make comfortable wearing body vests. The midnight shift had been relatively slow, and few of us were taking a break in a parking lot just shooting the you-know-what when the call came across the radio. We were dispatched to a call for police, and the address given was a payphone at a closed business. It wasn't uncommon in my beat to get a call like that. Once you get there and once the police respond, what they find out is that someone has stiffed the call in, and there's another crime happening in another part of the beat or the sector. Believing it may have been a crow call, I headed to that call alone. Upon my arrival, I saw a female wearing very short cotton shorts and a skimpy tank top. As I approached her, I could tell she was sobbing, and when I asked what was wrong, she simply said, "He raped me. He raped me." I clicked on my flashlight and placed it in my arm to start taking notes after I called for the ambulance, and that's when I saw blood running down her thighs. The female told me that this was from him cleaning her out with a removable shower head after he had raped her several times over the last several hours. While talking to her, I found out that she was only 14 years old and had run away from home earlier that week, not knowing what was going to lay in life for her. She began telling me little details about the man who she said had raped her, the house where it happened, all these details in the surrounding village and the path she had taken to get to the payphone. Although she didn't know the man's name, I knew exactly who she was talking about and exactly where this had taken place. I also knew he had a history of violent crimes and wouldn't be willing to cooperate. By this time, several other police cars had shown up on the scene, including one officer who was very much by the book. I promptly advised him to stay with the ambulance and wait while the victim was wait for the hospital and the victim until the detective could get there to take her story. Then I met with the other officers to tell them what had happened and see who was ready to get this guy. A couple of them knew this was going to be playing in the gray area and opted out. But several officers agreed and said that we needed to handle the situation. We quietly positioned ourselves around the perimeter of the house, and when everyone was ready, I knocked on the door and called for the man by name. Immediately, a man's voice shouted, "Who's there?" I identified myself again and told him to open the door so we could talk. The man then yelled back, "I ain't got nothing to do with that gal." That statement right there sealed the deal in my mind that we were right on track because nobody said anything about a female. So with that, I began to prop the screen door open. As I was propping the screen door open, another officer asked me what was going on. I told him I smelled smoke, and it kind of sounded like someone was calling for help inside. That meant that we had to kick the door to make sure someone wasn't in need of life-saving assistance. The other officer stepped around the corner as I kicked the front door. The middle door finally buckled and swung wide open with the third blow. The smell of bleach hit me like a freight train and nearly took my breath away. I shined my flashlight inside the doorway and saw the man standing over a bucket with a mop in his hand. He was in the middle of cleaning the crime scene. He was scrubbing the crime scene. We made eye contact as he took a combative stance and raised the mop handle as if he were going to use it like a baseball bat toward me. I calmly, very politely told him that we had really messed up. I'm not going to use the word that, that he actually said, and began to walk through the door. As I got closer, I holstered my duty weapon to free up my hands. I knew he would probably hit me once I closed the distance between us. And that was fine with me because that was nothing compared to what he was going to get if he did. Sure enough, he got one good swing in that caught me on my left side, but it didn't slow me down. I took him to the ground with a knee in his chest and began punching him. I punched him until I felt something snap in my hand. I knew immediately it was broken, but I was just angered. It just angered me more, so I kept swinging. It wasn't until another officer yelled that my hand was broken that I began using my elbow to deliver blows till I could barely lift my arms. When I was done, I put him in handcuffs and transported him to the jail while other officers handled the crime scene. It wasn't until I returned for my next shift that I learned the prosecuting attorney refused to issue any charges against the subject. The reasoning had nothing to do with anything we had done or the lack of evidence. It was simply because they didn't believe it would be easy to maintain contact with a 14-year-old victim since she lived in another state. So really, the only justice the 14-year-old girl got was what was delivered on the tile floor of that living room that day when I took him into custody. This stuff happens more often than officers and anyone wants to believe. It was also in the moment that I knew I could no longer hold the thin blue line in the way that officers are meant to. More and more, we are handcuffing our police officers. To a degree, I understand it. The idea of a vigilante officer operating in the gray area space of law enforcement is dangerous. The idea of law enforcement order was once defined by morals and ethics, right and wrong, good versus evil. Now it's becoming more and more defined by politics and conveniences. We're no longer enforcing the law. We're changing it to make it more convenient. Look no further than Massachusetts, where the Attorney General is decriminalizing a string of crimes. Look no further than sanctuary cities, where anybody can come into that state, that city. Look no further than the fact that this scumbag got to walk free because it would be inconvenient to prosecute him. I could not, in good faith, continue to be a police officer. To do so would have continued to expose me to more grave injustices than I would have felt compelled to and to fix my own. That is not what an individual who holds the thin blue line does. The profession deserves men and women of stronger restraint than I. Today, I do not wear a uniform, and I am glad, for I'm not the sheepdog. I am the wolf now. You know, I read this article over and over again, and I kept thinking about these men that I just told you about, the Mike Hugheses, the Robert Mitchell, the Nooner Griffith, the Dell Durham. That was in the day back in the early 70s when you had to fight your way out of most situations. Those situations turned easily on us. There's many of us that have scrapes and bruises and scars that never will go away, not only physically but mentally of what happened back then. But I will say this, when a police officer gets to the point that he no longer feels that he can enforce the law fairly and equitably and with all malice toward none, it is time for that person to trade occupations. It's time for them to pick up some other kind of notebook and start working. You know, I'm very proud of the 45 years that I put in. I have not been proud of everything I've ever done in my career. We all have made mistakes, but we all have learned from those mistakes. To tell you one quick story, when I was a very rookie police officer, and actually, Mike Hughes was on my shift as well as Paul Pochival. And we were all led by our lieutenant, the fine Robert Mitchell. We had got a call, or I had got a call, on the northern part of Temple of a baby that had been crying all night long. The neighbors next door were concerned on the safety of that child, said he'd been crying for at least 8 hours, nonstop. When I arrived, and it was right across from what they used to call in Temple, the peanut mill on North French Avenue, got to the door, the shack house. It was in the wintertime. Heat comes steaming out of the house. being the height I am, I had to bend over just to walk into the front door of the house. I witnessed a baby, couldn't have been more than 1 year old, that had repeated 40 or 50 cigarette burns on its arms. And a half-drunk, half-doped-out man that was supposedly taking care of that child. Did I want to hurt that man? Absolutely. Did I want to do things unspeakable to that man? Absolutely. Did I do that? No, I didn't. I could have very easily. We have to remember that as bad as things are, as bad as we want to hurt somebody, when we do, we're no longer on the side of the thin blue line. We're on the side of destruction. We're on the side of anarchy. Sometimes a little anarchy is good, but most of the time it's not. I will say, and on the last lament on this particular little story, on my way to the hospital, to the police station, the young man, probably 30 years old, maybe less, in handcuffs, sitting in the back of a police car. Well, back then, our cages had extruded wire. It wasn't like the plexiglass shields that the police officers have now. It was just extruded metal wire that was made by our shops. Unfortunately, on my way to the police station, a dog ran out in front of me, and I had to slam on my brakes. Sometimes dogs do good things for police officers. Long story making short is I'm proud of the police officers we have in our society. Not every police officer is there for the right reason. Not every police officer is there to do well. When those police officers aren't there, it's time for them to change occupations, to change professions. And when you get old enough that you feel like you no longer can do the job the way it should be done, it's time to move on, and I moved on. I'm proud of what I did. I'm proud of the people I worked with. I'm proud of the people that I mentored as a chief of police. But I will say this. Once again, as the story told, politics makes a bad bedfellow when it comes to law enforcement. So anyway, I hope all of you have a chance to go celebrate the rebirth of Christ tomorrow, the resurrection. Have a great weekend, everybody. Have a great week. Spend some time with your families. Give them a hug, and God bless everyone.
These days, you can't afford to take care of contracting issues alone. You need someone who will be there to do what is best for you and your project. I'm Jason Donald, and that's what we do at EBCO Development. Take care of you and your construction project from start to finish. For quality new construction, remodel, and roofing services, call EBCO Development at 254-697-2186. And know that we will be there for you. EBCO Development. Let's see what we can build together.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Next time you need heating and air conditioning or even duct cleaning, call Climate Control Air Conditioning and Heating in Rockdale. Routine maintenance, repairs, installation, or duct cleaning. Get the pros at Climate Control Air Conditioning and Heating. 512-446-4020. Stop by 1244 U.S. 79 in Rockdale. They can service all brands of residential and commercial HVAC systems and are available 24 hours a day, including weekends and holidays. For the best, call Climate Control in Rockdale. 512-446-4020.
Hi, everyone. Matt, your host from Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program here, and I'm very excited to tell you about our new sponsor, Liquor Depot, located in the Milam Plaza right next to Brookshire Brothers. As you know, I'm a bartender, and when I walk into Liquor Depot, I get excited looking at all the variations of wine, beer, and spirits. So if you're going to have a party, wedding, or business event, and you want to serve alcohol, Liquor Depot is the place to come to stock your bar and your icebox. Great prices, excellent selection, and lots of friendly help to get you what you need. There are lots of great enhanced gift ideas, too, for any occasion. Liquor Depot is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and is located at 1604 West 4th. So stop in today and stock up or call Liquor Depot at 254-605-0766.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms,
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. Again, it's April 20th, 2019, the day before Easter, so I wish everybody a happy Easter weekend. Be safe out there, and enjoy the day with family and friends or whatever it is that you're going to be doing. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in this part of the show, we do the devotional minute, and what I do is I send texts out to people. I've got a long list of people that anywhere Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 in the morning, I'm sending it out. That's just when I do my thing, so if you're interested in receiving this devotional text, give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Tell me who you are and give me a textable number. I send them individually, not in groups, so you're not going to know who's who there. It's just going to be between me and you. And this week, I'm going to read to you Friday's devotional. And it goes as follows. This is me. Good morning. I'm not a biblical scholar, which by now I'm sure you figured out. But there is something I learned that has helped me and I think will help you too. It's the confessing of our sins to the Lord. As an example, we may feel that harboring evil towards someone may cause us to lose our salvation because it's sinful in nature. But in confessing and battling against it, our salvation is retained. You know, I put a definition for deliberately. Deliberately is consciously and intentionally on purpose. And then the definition for battle or battling, fighting or struggling tenaciously to achieve or resist something. I continue. We can relate this to Paul's struggle from Romans 7:22 through 25. It says, "For I joyfully concur with the law of God in the inner man. But I see a different law in the members of my body, waging war against the law of my mind and making me a prisoner of the law of sin which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will set me free from the body of this death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord." And I follow up with this. "Confess to the Lord and battle with strength that God provides. He will finish the good work that he has started in you, me, us." Lots of thought in my head. I hope they came out clearly today. Have a blessed day. So that's what I send. I send a short text like that Monday through Friday from around 2 to 4 in the morning. So if you're going to take it, you might want to put your phone on silent. And hopefully you will get something out of it. Okay, let's move on now to the product spotlight sponsored by ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. I've known Arch, the owner of ANSI Firearms, for many years. Fantastic guy. Got a great crew. He's got Clint, Dennis, Mike. Good quality products, pistols, rifles, shotgun, ammo, knives, accessories, reloading equipment, the works. They can get you what you need. But this week, we're going to talk about the Mossberg 500. And I know it's a basic, but it's a classic. And when I was in there, I was just looking around, and I saw the Mossberg 500, the 20-inch barrel, the extended mag tube. I'm thinking, you know, we're always looking for new and improved and fancy. Why not just go back to the basic classic stuff that works every time? So I got a review here from Guns and Ammo by Brad Fitzpatrick, and I dissected it, so I'm going to read to you parts of it right now. Why the Mossberg 500 is the best home defense shotgun of all time. Today's consumer has a wide variety of choices when selecting a defensive shotgun, but which of these guns earns the title as the best home defense shotgun ever? In my opinion, that would be Brad Fitzpatrick, the Mossberg 500 stands out from the crowd for a number of reasons, and I'm right there with him. First, Mossberg, and this is a good history here, first, Mossberg has been building the 500 for 52 years. During that time, more than 10 million of these pump guns have rolled off the assembly line in North Haven, Connecticut and Eagle Pass, Texas. For the last 30 years, the 590 has been the shotgun of choice for the U.S. military, and more than 100,000 units have been supplied to the armed forces. The 500 and 590 lines also have the distinction of being the only shotguns ever to pass the rigorous mil-spec 3443 torture test, proving what generations of shooters already knew. Mossberg guns are tough. Pump-action shotguns are favored by police and military for two primary reasons. They are fast and reliable. The Mossberg 500 series has earned a reputation for dependability, which is paramount when selecting a home defense shotgun. Manually cycling the action simplifies the reloading process and reduces the odds of malfunction. In experienced hands, the pump shotgun is almost as fast as a semi-auto. And I can attest to that. I've seen one of my shooters there at the shop use a short pump shotgun, and my gosh, he's fast and accurate. And sliding the fore end forward helps notch. Well, let me read that again. And sliding the fore end forward helps. I'm skipping my pages here. The shooter to return to the target and stabilize the gun. All of these qualities make pump guns a logical choice for home defense, and Mossberg makes more pump guns than any company in the world. Mossberg is the largest manufacturer of shotguns in the U.S. by over 40%, thanks to a large part of the success of the 500, 590, and 590A1. With over 20 different defensive and tactical offerings, Mossberg most likely has a shotgun that meets your needs. They offer versions with extended magazine tubes, heat shields, integral lights, accessory rails, tactical sights, and a host of other accessories. From a practical standpoint, Mossberg shotguns have several design elements that make them a superb choice for home defense. First of all, the top of the receiver-mounted safety is easy to find and manipulate and doesn't require adjusting the position of your shooting hand. In addition, left-handed shooters will find the safety position as easy to use as right-handed shooters will, and the large notched safety button is easy to locate even in total darkness. The action release is located at the rear left of the trigger, making it easy to find and eliminating the need to reach around the front of the trigger guard. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, the shell lifters of the Mossberg pumps remain in the up position when a shell is in the chamber. This allows for faster reloads without the possibility of pinched fingers. Robust design, a variety of options, and a 50-plus year history of excellence makes the Mossberg line a logical choice for home defense. In addition, this gun is still made in the U.S. and is still sold for a reasonable price. There are plenty of defensive shotguns in the world, but in my mind, the Mossberg 500 is still the best. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I remember way back in the day, many, 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 many years ago, my very first shotgun was a Mossberg 500 pistol grip with an 18-inch barrel. And I shot that thing like crazy, and it never glitched. And from that point on, I've always had a Mossberg of some sort, whether it be a Mossberg 500 or a Maverick 88, something like that. But they're great, great priced. You can adapt them for pretty much any scenario. Fiber stocks, wood stocks, cami stocks. And if you go to ANSI Firearms in Heidenhammer, Arch has got one there on the shelf. He's got a variety of different Mossbergs. If you don't like the one that's there, they can get you whatever you want. Reliable, easy to use, good price. Give them a call, 254-983-4417. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, you'll see me holding the 500 there, the 20-inch one with the extended tube. So check them out, ANSI Firearms in Heidenhammer, 254-983-4417. Tell them you heard it here on the radio. Let them know they're sponsorship is working. And remember, it's a circle of life. You support the sponsors who support me, and I'm able to stay on the air, and it's the circle of life, okay? All right, Kincaid, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to have my special guest, Bill Whitmire. We're going to be talking some politics here and some immigration and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So we'll see you on the other side.
Coons, the owner of AMC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to AMC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. AMC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Bald Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop it at 408 West Bath. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Bald Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bath.
You've been doing something with satisfied customers since 1984. You've been doing something right. I'm Jason Bonalek, and that's the story of EBCO Development, providing quality new construction, remodeling, and roofing with complete customer satisfaction. We have the knowledge and experience to get the job done right the first time, and are a proud member of the Better Business Bureau. Start your building project by calling EBCO Development at 254-697-2186. That's 254-697-2186.
Capilino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Capilino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capilino, Dodd, Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, April 20th, 2019. And to my left sits Bill Whitmire, here, the Republican. He's a Republican chair for Milam County and also, of course, the host of his special show, Bleacher Bum Radio. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's good to always have you here because I know you've got a good feel for all the things that we're going to be talking about in a little bit here. I've been talking to you about some articles I've been reading and things that are irritating me, and I'm sure there's some things that are maybe irritating you, and there's so much of it, I don't really know where to start. Is there anything that I want to just spill out of you that we can start this off with, or am I going to spit up my guts first?
No, let's wait to spit up your guts. I'll give you something that I kind of wanted that I think would feed into your audience pretty well, and that is, obviously, we've talked a little bit about the constitutional carry law that's being pushed through the legislature right now, or trying to be, you know, pushed through the legislature, and I think it had a pretty good chance of passing this year. However, it's hit a hitch, and it's kind of the same hitch that we had several years ago. 2012, we were looking to change the platform for the Republican Party of Texas, and a group of, it's a Fort Worth group of constitutional carry folks showed up in front of the convention carrying weapons legally. There was nothing wrong with the way they were carrying their weapons, but it kind of changed the outlook of some of the delegates to where it didn't pass and didn't get on the platform until 2014. And several of us sat down with the leaders of that group and said, what you want to do is great. The way you're trying to do it is the wrong way because you're intimidating people.
There's a phrase that says, you may be right, but it's not always profitable.
Right. And that's what's happening this year is there's a large group of legislators that are sitting on the fence, and I think they want to go with the constitutional carry. However, this same group has organized a larger group of people to go out to those legislators' neighborhoods, home neighborhoods, and these guys are in Austin, their families are out there, and it's kind of taken that, now I think that bill is going to get put on the back burner, and it's going to be on hold until 2021. Because there are so many legislators who have either been offended or feel like there's some sort of intimidation. So my feeling in talking to guys in Austin is that they really want to push this through. They really want to get to where we need to be with that. But it's this group of folks that take it to the limit, and that limit may cost them getting it. And here's the next part of it is our state, the way our state's voting is changing. And we're not going to have, you know, I think we're going to have a legislature in another 2 or 4 years that's much more closer to the center. I don't think we're going to go as far and swing all the way back to the left where everybody's a Democrat, but we're going to come back towards the center. We're already seeing it happen in you know, the property tax legislation. They wanted a 2% hike was all the counties could do. Dan Patrick's group has offended so many people that was changed to where they thought they could only get 4.5. They ended up compromising and getting 3.5, which means the county can only raise taxes 3.5% before it has to go to a vote. I'm in full agreement with that. I think there needs to be some kind of limitation on your county government. But that could have been so much more, but these kind of tactics of going after pie-in-the-sky type legislation and not handling the basic stuff is what cost us. So the message is, be smart about how you protest things. Be smart about how you demonstrate things and show people how to safely do things, but not try to work on the intimidation side, because whether you mean to intimidate or not, that's what happens. And when that happens, people are apt to not do what you want them to do if they feel intimidated.
That goes both ways. I mean, people on both sides, whatever the issue is, if you get so incensed and you don't use your common sense, it screws it up for everybody.
And I'm good with the other side, not using their common sense. But I'm on this side, and I kind of want them to use our common sense. So, but that's all on that.
All right. I'll tell you what. Since we're talking Texas, and Texas has a large border, let's talk about this article here about the New Mexican government, New Mexico governor, attacking the Citizen Border Patrol after 1,800 illegal cross in 24 hours. How do you even come up with the guts or the onions to attack a Border Patrol for trying to protect his border when 1,800 in one day are trying to cross the border?
Well, she's a Democrat, and she's looking at potential voters. I mean, if you stop 1,800 people from coming across, that's 1,800 voters that you're not going to get next election.
You say that so quickly, and people may think you're just kidding. You're not. And I agree. I totally get it.
There are states out there that have put that onto their state legislation this year, is to try to make it legal for illegals to vote in their state. And let's not call them migrants or this, that, or the other.
They're illegal aliens.
Exactly. They are illegal aliens.
I got a call. Okay. I'll tell you what. We got a call. Let's see. All right, everybody. Kincaid's doing a great job here. We're going to see if we can get the caller on. Anyway, this article, I want to read this article because I want you to hear the anger, the stupidity, the ridiculousness of what these people say. And I'm stalling because I think we got a call, right?
You got it.
Great job. All right. I'm going to read this article. When the caller gets on, hold on, just stay up there for a while. It goes, just days after Border Patrol apprehend 1,800 illegal immigrants in one day, the government of New Mexico and the ACLU are criticizing a citizen group patrolling the border. It should go without saying that regular citizens have no authority to arrest or detain anyone, New Mexico's Democratic Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham told the New York Times. She also said it's completely unacceptable that migrant families might be menaced or threatened in any way, shape, or form when they arrive at our border. Well, let me tell you something, lady. They shouldn't be dragging their kids in the middle of the night through dangerous areas. They should keep them home and do it the right way. I'm pausing on the article because we have a call. Welcome to Aaron's High Cabin Adventure Radio program. My name is Matt. Who am I speaking to? Hello? Go ahead. Turn your radio down, I guess. All right, put them on hold, okay? We're going to continue on the article.
They're just not.
Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union of New Mexico sent a letter to Governor Grisham and Attorney General Hector Balderas on Thursday asking for the groups of patriots voluntary patrolling the border to be investigated. Below is an excerpt of the letter in which they call the group United Constitutional Patriots, White Nationalists, and Fascists. Here it goes. Quote, two nights ago on April 16, 2019, an armed fascist militia organization describing itself as the United Constitutional Patriots arrested nearly 300 people seeking safety in the United States, including young children near Sunland Park, New Mexico. Other videos appear to show arrests in the past few hours. The vigilante members of the organization, including Jim Benvey, who posted videos and photographs of the unlawful arrest to social media, are not police or law enforcement, and they have no authority under New Mexico or federal law to detain or arrest immigrants in the United States. Their actions undermine the legitimate efforts of the state's law enforcement officials to keep New Mexico's families safe, and they erode the community trust. Down here, though, it said, what was it, the citizen's arrest? Why don't you explain that, Bill? You said it clearly, where this guy, they don't arrest them, they're verbally...
They're very non-threatening from what I saw. There was the BBC did a really pretty good article on it, video expose on it. And the gentleman that was speaking for the group said that basically what they do is they get up and they say, you know, you're under citizen's arrest and you need to wait until the Border Patrol gets here. And then that's it. And he said that 9 out of 10 of them will just sit down and wait for the Border Patrol. And then that 1 out of 10 will walk off. And if they walk off, they don't do anything. They just let them walk.
So here you have these people making a stink. And it makes you, when you read the story, you people are so worried about losing your potential voters. You don't give a damn about the security of your border. It's disgusting. It makes my stomach turn when I read what these people have to say and their neglect for this country, its borders, it's the way we do things. And the key word is illegal. Illegal. What part of illegal don't you freaking get, you morons?
Well, this week, the president came out and said that let's send those to sanctuary cities.
Amen to that.
And there was actually a study done by... I can't think. It was one of the University of California campuses, and they said that in actuality, 95% of all illegal aliens that are detained, then they, if they are given bail to come back to court, they are allowed to go to a family member who is either legally in the nation, legally in America, or they are an American citizen, and that 95% of them end up in sanctuary cities because that's where their relatives are to begin with.
Let's talk about Cher. Did you see the article about Cher?
What she said.
As much as I like Cher,
you like Cher?
I like everything outside. If she would just shut her mouth politically, I'd like her, okay? I do like her. I've been watching her since I was a little kid. But you put that other part to it, man, it sinks the ship. But here she goes, no, we can't do the sanctuary city thing because we can't help who we've got already. So here you got a city that can't take any more people, yet you want 1,800 people to come across the border overnight, in one night. This country can't take it because these people they take the money out of the country, and if they're still in the country, the services of people like you and I, the middle class who pay for most of the bill, there's only so many of us putting money into the system, and they got all these illegals coming and taking that money and bringing it down south again. And yeah, they do some things for us. Sure, I get the field, the whole, I get all that crap, okay? But don't even start with me there. I'm talking about the mass border crossings of all these people. It's hurting. It's going to kill this country.
Well, they talk about bringing them in and them, and that the illegals do jobs that Americans won't do. And if that's the truth, and that's the God-honest truth, okay, I get it. Take away the welfare from the Americans that are here that won't do those jobs. We give away so much welfare and so many unemployment benefits to Americans. If there are actually jobs that Americans won't take, that we got to bring illegals in here, that's fine. Get rid of all these long-term unemployment plans, long-term welfare plans to all these people who won't get out and get a job then. Because obviously, if we've got to bring illegals in here to do jobs that Americans won't do, then the jobs are here. That's not the problem. The problem is the people getting off their rears and going and doing the job.
A lot of people, I've talked to a lot of people, I hear a lot of people, I watch a lot of people on news reports on this, and their responses to questions on, concerning this topic are so shallow. It's as though they don't do their homework. They have no core belief. They have no understanding of the fundamentals of being an American. It's getting diluted and lost. It's scary, man. We were talking about the numbers that people do things. This country was formed with, what, 3% of the population at that time actually doing something, or was it even less than that?
It's probably less than that.
Less than that. A very small percentage keep our way of life preserved, ladies and gentlemen, and more and more of that percentage is getting dwindled because people are being ignorant to the fact they got their heads up their phones, they're not paying attention, they're being swayed by a media that is very against the way we live. I don't care what you say, I see it. When I see it and I hear it personally and then read it or watch it and it's being spun around, you're trying to make me look like a fool, and I'm no fool. I do my homework.
Well, I would say probably 10% of the population, not the world population, but the U.S. population, is proactive, or they're going to take action before things happen. 90% of America is reactive. You never hear of any, well, I can't say never, but you very rarely hear of anybody coming up with something to save the world from some sort of cancer, or to save the world from some sort of disease, or to save the world from some sort of anything, you know, mistreatment or whatever, until that person's life has been touched by either that disease or that mistreatment or whatever. And until that happens, everybody just runs around not thinking about it. Somebody asked me a while back about how do we increase voter turnout? How do we get more people to vote? Obviously, voter apathy is terrible. We had 22% of the people last year vote in the primaries. The primaries, people will show up a little bit more for the general election, maybe 40%, but only 20% for the primaries. But in all reality, the primary is where you choose your candidates. That's where you choose the person that's got the chance to win in November. And if you're not there in the primaries, you're not doing it. So my solution was real simple. As a government, you create the budget first. Then you turn around and you look at your GMP and you say, okay, this is the percentage of the GMP that we need to cover this budget, plus 10% to pay off the debt. Then you set that tax rate at whatever it is. So let's say the tax rate, you're going to have 30% of everybody's pay. Everybody's pay. No deductions, no anything. Everybody pays 30% to pay the bills for that year. And that's how you do it. And if everybody, whether you make $5 million or you make $5,000, if you have to pay 30% of your income, people will vote. People will get up and vote. But right now, nobody does anything until their life is personally touched by it. We don't think about the guys in Afghanistan right now. A lot of people don't, because they don't have any friends. They don't have any family. Their life is not touched. The other night, I got to spend the night in the Chicago airport. I spent 28 hours there. If you ever have an opportunity to spend a lot of time in the Chicago airport like that, pass. But I got to spend all that time in there, and it was graduation day at Navy boot camp. And I'm watching all these 19, 18, 20-something-year-olds walk through in their brand-new dress blues with one medal on there, a National Defense Medal in most cases. Some might have had a shooting medal. And then I'm watching all these young men that are the same age walking around with laptops and briefcases, some dressed nice because they might have a nice job, others dressed however. And I think, you know, those kids that are walking around in those blue uniforms, black uniforms, let's be honest, they are black.
In uniform.
But in uniform, they've got something there. They've got something the rest of their life that they put something on the line for their country. They are proactive. And maybe some of them joined because family, but they are proactive. And those other guys, they don't have a problem in the world. They don't care about any of this stuff, you know.
And I'm sure many, I'm sure there's a nice handful of those who are very patriotic. Don't misunderstand me. The point is the culture, the kids and children who are being raised through our schools now are not being taught the patriotism of this country and what that flag represents. People say, I'm not, who's that senator or whatever, the congressman who said that rag, he's a rag. That flag on top of the pole represents a way of life. And it's our duty to protect it, defend it, and keep it. And yeah, like I was talking about with Rick, as long as the pillars of strength of this country, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights and all that, and the patriotism is there, not chipped away, sure, we can try all these different things out. And if they work, they work. If they don't, we vote them out the next time it comes around. But you can't dissect, disintegrate, chip away, throw away your pillars of your nation. And one of those pillars is a secured border.
Yep. It's, you know, I recently had a chance to spend some time over in England. Well, we were there last week, and all the Brexit stuff was going off. And we were actually there for the big demonstration around Parliament. We picked the worst time in the world to go to Parliament because that's when they had – that was Brexit Day, and they had a huge demonstration. And we were – it's kind of cool. I mean, until the smoke bombs came out, and it was all pretty cool. But
he's online right now? He's on the phone now?
But the guy that the thing about it was, I had a chance to talk to a lot of English folks about this while we were there, and a friend of mine who is a pilot, who was one of my pilots in the Navy, who lives over there now. He said there are good things and bad things about living in England. You know, you have universal health care. However, it's more about quantity than quality. They're just trying to get people through there. So we make jokes about people that have bad teeth from England. But the truth is, unless you got the money to go to a dentist and pay your own bill, they're just going to do what they got to do to get rid of you. And the thing about Brexit was the biggest complaint I heard was the fluidity of the border. And a lot of folks were upset because you'd get people come in from Poland. You'd get people, and they have free reign to come and go as they want because they're all EU citizens. They would come in to England and take jobs for cheaper money than English folks that live there were willing to take.
Sounds familiar.
Sounds very familiar. And once they got in there and they started being paid in England, they immediately became eligible for the English healthcare system, which in turn backed that system up, which everybody in England, you get free health care. You're paying for it in your taxes, but you get free health care. But now that you've just added all these workers from other countries that come in, and now they're a part of it as well. And as the EU is one big European government, essentially, what it means is that every country that they have in Europe is basically a state. It's just like our federal government, just like our federal government, England, just like Texas is right now, is a giver. They pay more money into the EU than they receive back from the EU in benefits. Texas, as a state, we give more into the union and get less back out. And that's where, you know, with that Brexit, kind of got off the subject there, but that's where that Brexit was. The porous borders is one of the leading reasons for Brexit. I worry about the southern border. I also worry about the border with the United States. I think we need a wall all the way around Texas. But that border, it was amazing to me. I thought it was going to be economics and other reasons, and it was economics, but it was the main reason that every person that I asked, why are you for Brexit, within their top one or two was always the porousness of the border and just allowing anybody with an EU, because you come in, you let's say you come into Germany, you have some Islamic folks come into Germany, you don't know what their background is, but then they get that document that where they can travel around the EU because of their German, not citizenship, but they're legal in Germany, so they can travel around the EU. Now you're letting them in. And it's legal there. This one is illegal. These folks are coming across the United States border illegally. This is not even a matter of legitimate crossings.
You know, we're a very compassionate country. But I want to make a comparison here. If I'm a soldier on the battlefield, wearing a uniform, I've got compassion. There's sometimes you pull the trigger, there's sometimes you don't. But if it gets to the point where my compassion will endanger a mission, that compassion gets put in check and the job needs to be done. The compassion of this country, of a lot of people in this country who say, open borders, let them come in, we'll take care of them, you're not seeing the picture. You're about to get yourself killed, figuratively speaking, like the soldier would be showing compassion to the enemy who's going to try and kill them, okay? Compassion is compassion, and it's great, but it must be under check in certain conditions, okay? That is your host's opinion, and I think it's a very valid opinion. What do you think of that?
Well, you can say it like I heard someone say it last week. It's my opinion, but it also happens to be fact. No, I agree. I mean, you know, somebody asked me last week, what did I think was the biggest... One of the folks from England said, what did I think was the biggest problem in the world? And I said, overpopulation, pure and simple. There's just too many. There's more people on Earth right now alive than there are dead in the history of the world. You know, and we don't think about that.
Yeah, but I still think, you know, this world, the Lord blesses us with a place that it can take care of anything. It's a matter of how we handle it.
Well, that's the thing, is we don't look at that. You know, you think about it in this terms of a city. The city can build for 10 years down the road, or they can build 10 years behind. You look at Austin, they're continually 10 years behind in their building.
Trying to catch up, yeah.
And, you know, 30 years ago when I was in high school, I remember they said, you know, you had 9 or 10 rail spurs coming out of Austin, and they wanted to do a light rail system. All the rural counties voted for it. Travis County voted against it and outvoted everybody because of the number of people in Travis County, and we never got a light rail system. Think about how useful a light rail system would have, because one of those railways came right here through Cameron. Think about it. If you work in Austin, how easy would it be to jump on a train, a light rail train, into Austin to go to work in the morning, instead of having to make that drive in your own car? That'd be a whole lot easier. But we passed up on it because of Travis. We as a country, we as a world, we tend to look, we tend to be too reactive and not proactive. How many, look at Rockdale and Cameron. Your water systems, pretty good, huh? Now we're really reactive about it, but why weren't we proactive about it 30 years ago and done it in little steps over 30 years instead of trying to figure out how to make it work now?
Same thing with the roads, man. Putting layer upon layer upon layer, and you got this big hump on the road, and this, trying to cross from one road to the other is ridiculous. Hey, look, before we run out of time, this has been eating at me.
Yeah, it has.
There's Omar. What's her
Elon,
first name?
Elon Omar.
Elon Omar, okay. What's her status?
She's a House of Representative member, a Democrat House of Representative member from Minnesota, from Minneapolis, actually.
Okay, and there's this feud going on, I guess, with Trump and her, based on words and tweets. But the bottom line is this. She goes, she says, and she's Muslim, Somalia American, hyphenated American there, so she should be, she's from Somalia, like I'm Lebanese heritage, but I'm an American, you cut me, I bleed red, white, and blue. But she goes here, for far too long, we have lived with the discomfort of being a second-class citizen. And frankly, I'm tired of it, and every single Muslim in this country should be tired of it too. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm tired of Muslims in this country not standing up and saying, hey, yeah, I'm a Muslim. I'm a peace-loving American. I'm a Muslim. That's your faith, and God bless you. I'll wear a uniform to defend your right to have your faith that way. But you need to stand up. You need to say things and defend this country. Everybody seems to be scared of bringing this up. So when she says this comment of you're tired of it, well, I'm tired of you and your attitude of how everything's got to revolve around you. It doesn't revolve around you. It revolves around this country and the safety and the security of this country, and everybody needs to put towards that. What's your thought on that, Bill?
Well, then she went on to say that it was, and I want to phrase, I don't want to take out a phrase. She said that CARE was founded after 9/11, which it wasn't. It was founded in 94, but because they recognized that some people did something that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberties. Well, first of all, CARE was founded in 94 by some scholars to make, and it got sidetracked, and it's about 7 or 8 people that they claim they have all those members, and it stands for the Council on American Islamic Relations, and it's a farce. They have been accused of, and they have done things to aid Hamas and Israel and various other things. what she said is not the first time she's said something completely stupid either. She's gone after, she's made more anti-Semitic remarks than some of the neo-Nazis running around, but she's made it from an Islamic standpoint, so therefore, it's, you know, we're going to let it slide. Most liberals let it slide. The president has not, and other staunch conservatives, real conservatives, have not let it, and it should not let it. And when it first happened, both Nancy Pelosi, Charles Schumer, all of them, Van Hollen, all of those big liberals in D.C. stood up against it. Then when she did it again, I mean, then they wanted her to apologize. She didn't apologize. She made some half attempt at an apology that was not an apology. But then within a week, she did it again, and they all, you know, just said, oh, she's being taken out of context. There's the context right there. We just read what her remarks were about 9/11, and she got bashed over 9/11, and then it was, you know, oh, well, that's not what I really meant, blah, 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 blah. It's not what I said. It is exactly what she said.
A lot of people may not like what I think or what I say, and first, I don't care. But two, what I think and what I say is all based on patriotism, the protection of this country. I and so many others, you included, have worn that uniform to defend that flag and give you the right, those of you who may oppose these things, the right to say what you don't like, and I'll defend it. But man, you got to secure, you got to protect the goose. You kill the goose, there go your eggs. And speaking of eggs, it's Easter. And
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. And take those eggs that that blessed goose gives us, color them any color you want. Have a great time with your family. Enjoy the food, companionship, and don't forget what the true meaning of Easter is. And until next week, I guess keep your powder dry and God bless. Kincaid, take us out with some good music, and we'll see you next week.